Hello, hello, and welcome to Ecce Podcast, seeking to behold the beauty of God and the human heart. You guys, I'm so excited for you to finally hear this episode today. I did this interview with one of my best friends, Zuri Davis, several months ago, but the episode was never released, and it's actually perfect because this topic fits in so nicely with all the other topics of season three. And Zuri is just such a treasure, and I so am appreciative of all of the vulnerability that she puts into this conversation today. This is actually a two-part episode, or two-part conversation rather. So you will hear the second part of my conversation with Zuri next week when our episode is released. So without further ado, here's the fabulous Miss Zuri Davis. Hey Zuri, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I'm so excited we were finally able to do this. Zuri is one of my very good friends. I feel like everyone I have on here is my really good friend, but I totally mean it. Like, the reason I started this podcast is because I have amazing friends who have amazing stories and amazing just words of wisdom that need to be shared with the world. So anyway, Zuri, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to these days.
All right. Well, my name is Zuri, just in case you missed that. I write professionally. I have a wonderful dog. His name is Bishop.
Love that.
He's my pride and joy. Obviously, every single saying that it's a dog. I came into the church earlier this year, so this past Easter Vigil. It was the best moment of my life, and as I've already mentioned to Jen and a few other friends, it was like the biggest thing that's made me happy all year. Mm. So I'm very thankful to have had that conversion and to have access to this beautiful historical church.
Oh my gosh. And I'm just like so happy that I'm so happy for you for that. I think we've joked around with you for a long time about like, Zuri, when are you gonna be Catholic? And it finally worked, I guess.
Oh my gosh, there's so I live in Nashville, and the Dominican sister's mother house is here, and there's actually a nun, Sister Mary Claire, who helps me, like, she planted the seed as well. And I remember one of the first times we met each other, she was like, oh, you should be Catholic. And I, like, laughed in her face. I was like, no, that's silly.
Oh, that's
like,
funny.
Like, that's so foreign to me. And then a few months later, I was like, JK, give me the info.
Oh, I love that so much. I feel like it's really hard to hang out with nuns and see that joy and see that really just love and not want what they have.
She got me good. She invited me to tea and cookies in the rosary.
I love that. how nunly is that? Tea and cookies and rosary. I love so much.
No, she found everything that I loved. Minus the rosary, because I didn't know what it was, but then slowly she gifted me my first rosary, actually. Mm. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. I feel like all of my convert friends have like amazing stories about the first rosary that they like ever received or that they ever participated in. Like, oh, I should have had Anya talk about this on her episode, but I just think it's amazing that like her first rosary was like she was leading this rosary walk before she was Catholic with the bishop. And and have you not heard this story?
I haven't.
Yeah, so she was involved with this rosary walk. It was like a pro-life thing, of course. But she was like one of the leaders and was given a walkie-talkie and was just supposed to like repeat everything that the bishop was saying through the walkie-talkie to keep the people near the back like all together. And so she was praying a rosary without knowing what it was.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. And like that she was leading other people in that too. So I just think that's amazing.
That's also so Anya.
I know. So if you guys haven't heard Anya's episode, it was amazing. It came out a couple weeks ago about caring for moms postpartum. Go back and listen to that because she's amazing. And I actually met Zuri through Anya. So yeah, good friends lead to other good friends. It's amazing.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I'd like to point out that Jen and I kind of met, but like very much in the 2019 online way. I mean, it was like several years ago, but by the time we actually met in real life, I felt like I spent time with you and like
Yeah,
just knew
totally.
like so many things about you, like we did know
Totally.
each other in person.
Totally. Yep. And Zuri was also like our wingman to get Connor and I together at Anya's wedding. So, in case it wasn't a small enough world, there you go, make it even smaller.
Yes, I'm still waiting on my letter from the Vatican. Thanks for starting a new Catholic family. Hopefully we'll break up, but yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, let's go ahead and jump in. I know you wanted to share a little bit about your conversion story and the things that helped lead you to the fullness of the Catholic faith. So tell us a little about that.
Okay. Well, when I well, I grew up Church of Christ, so I was born and raised in that environment. My dad, he made it all the way to an elder of the church, which is like a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Even though the church, it's very egalitarian, still elders like do hold like that special role of decision making, and their families are supposed to be a certain way because they're models of the church, essentially. So there's like a lot of responsibility there. My grandpa was also an elder in his church, so there was like double responsibility because I don't know, people would always look at our family and expect us to behave a certain way to encourage everyone else.
Right. It's a lot of
So,
pressure.
oh yeah, looking back now, I don't know. Even when I stopped being Church of Christ, like still that pressure of people's eyes were on me, like people would report my activity back to like my
Oh
parents.
my
Like it was really
gosh.
crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And then needless to say, it was all very like anti-Catholic there. So, converting was not like smooth sailing all of the time. But I'll get to that a little bit later. So
Yeah.
basically, I grew up Church of Christ. My mom actually wasn't, she grew up Catholic here in Nashville. But by the time she met my dad, and converted, she wasn't like a practicing Catholic. So she never really told us about Catholicism except for all the negative things that she had experienced.
Right.
But it's funny because my mom inadvertently taught us Catholic beliefs. Like she taught us about a version of purgatory that, like, if you said that to a Church of Christ person, they'd be like, wait, what are you talking about?
Oh,
Like, this
that's
is not, you
funny.
don't condone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really, it's funny to see where like her Catholicism still pops up a little bit, even though like she's still like Church of Christ.
Yeah. But
So,
once a Catholic, always a Catholic. Like if
yeah,
you've been
right.
baptized in the fullness of the church, like you can't just become un-Catholic. You can go to whatever church you want on Sundays, but you're still
Yeah.
Catholic.
Oh, yeah. No. But so there's that. Well, so growing up early, I had like a lot of negative like influence, I guess about Catholicism. I remember our preacher telling us like Catholics are crazy
Oh,
because they
wow.
like worshiped Mary, like you could buy your way into heaven, like
Yeah.
all these things that I'm sure Catholic people have heard at some point
Yep.
or another. So it was definitely not on my radar at all for a very long time. When I got older, I think around 16, I got very serious about my faith. I like pulled myself up by the bootstraps and I was like, okay, you're 16 years old now. You're basically an adult. I was definitely not basically an adult at 16, but I thought I was. So I thought I needed to deepen my relationship with God. And I think it was around that time that I'd realized I really didn't have like a reason to have a relationship with God. For the most part, it was something that my parents did, and they took me to church with them and all these things, but like I didn't have a prayer life. Even when I tried to have a prayer life, like it didn't feel sincere at all. It felt like I was regurgitating a lot of things, and like there was nothing personal about that at all. So by the time I turned 18, I just decided to stop trying. I also graduated, moved out of my parents' house, and I moved to Washington, D.C. to start my career. So I had all of those things in my mind, and my relationship with the Lord essentially took a backseat, which is unfortunate, but there were also things that I had started to question about the Church of Christ. So around that time, I was really getting into criminal justice reform advocacy. I was really against the death penalty at that stage in my life, and it always bothered me how, like, the people I went to church with, they were very pro-life, but not even, like, consistently. It was definitely more in the pro-birth sense. But then they supported, like, the death penalty. And I was just like, no.
And that's true that, like, the Christian message is of mercy for anybody. Like, I'm sure that we've all done terrible things in our life that we regret, but just because somebody was caught and went to prison doesn't mean that they're less than.
And I think another issue I had, even before I got to the morality part, was just the amount of people who are innocent on death row, or the amount of people who aren't given a chance to have the DNA evidence against them tested. So I always, it bothered me how people tried to justify potentially innocent people dying just so a potentially guilty person would also die. And that never seemed right to me. But yeah, so I just kind of like left the Christian world, and then slowly started to hate it, just because I did see a lot more of like hypocrisy in Washington, D.C., especially because people would go and advocate for some of the most abhorrent beliefs and then do so under the name of Jesus, and that just felt very wrong to me, so I just kind of left it alone. So the biggest thing that happened in D.C. was I started sleeping around with people just in case, like, I don't know, it's like a sex episode, so sorry if you're, like, offended or, like, I don't know.
I'll put a disclaimer in the beginning if you don't want to listen with your kids.
Oh, yeah. I know some people, like, definitely don't like that at all. But basically, when I grew up in, like, the purity culture. So it was very much, like, the young people were told not to have sex with each other. But I and others observed that it was always, like, the burden was always placed on, like, the women a little bit more than the men. So, like, I remember guys doing stuff to girls in youth group, and the conversation would always be about, oh, well, like, she needs to blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, she didn't do that by herself. Like, there's someone engaging in that with her. So why aren't you talking about both of the people? So not only did that, it, like, weighed on my mind a lot, after I started, like, having sex with people, which, like, sounds really bad to say, but,
It's so common in today's world, and I think, especially when people aren't given that education and the rich theological background that the Catholic Church has in the form of theology of the body and all of that about, you know, like, why sex is sacred and why, like, women are sacred and to be honored, really. And I think it's so, so common, but people just don't talk about it because it's one of those unsightly things that in a church that wants to look perfect, we just don't address.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree. So I'll say there was one incident, really, that I feel really changed who I was as a person. It was actually the first guy that I'd ever met, who I, like, pursued that kind of relationship with. And I was, like, very young and naive, and I was, like, living in this new place. And I just remember this guy coming up to me at, like, a happy hour, because that's, like, where you meet people, I guess, I don't know. but, like, he was just saying, lots of different things that made me feel loved and accepted. And up until that point, I'd really been struggling with my personal identity. So I was very open to it. So long story short, obviously, like, we did the deed. Mm-hmm. But then I kept on trying to insert myself into his life. But at the same time, what he didn't initially tell me was he was trying to see other people. So he didn't really communicate that with me until a little bit further on.
Right.
So I think the worst incident that we ever had together was we had finally, like, stopped seeing each other because, like, I was very frustrated that I wasn't getting the full attention that I wanted.
Right.
And he was trying to have, like, a relationship with this girl, so he invited her to a party where I was. But the problem was he invited another girl to the party that he was, like, also trying to, like, spend time
with.
Oh,
man.
So I told the girl, and I was like, hey, just so you know, like, he brought someone else here, and I get, like, I don't know what he was thinking, like, you guys wouldn't talk to each other or whatever, but, like, you should know that if you're interested in him romantically. So they talked about it that night. She left, she was upset, and he yelled at me for telling her, and, like, he said, I don't understand why you're so upset, it's not took her virginity. And I was like, whoa, that's so crazy. Like, because you definitely did that to me.
Oh,
and then, like, you went and you slept with, like, a whole bunch of other people without, like, letting me know.
From
that moment on, I didn't have, like, a great friend group at the time. Again, I was, like, still new to the area. So this one person that I trusted gave me, like, the most worldly advice, and she said, in order to get over the heartbreak of feeling rejected like that, you just need to sleep with other people.
That is my least favorite advice in the whole wide world. So yeah, many people believe that, and
now,
it's so not true.
Yes, it is a total lie. Every time I hear that, I just want to, like, just talk to the person sternly and be like, you're wrong, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, oh my gosh, how hurtful, because, like, the soul of woman wants to be loved and wants to be desired and pursued and, like, not just used and discarded. And so to just use and discard and let yourself be used and discarded by someone else over and over again to fix the first time is not gonna fix anything.
Yes, and I'm really sad to say it took me a long time to realize that. So not only did I have that pain of rejection and then constant rejection because I was trying to get over the past rejection, mm-hmm. In the back of my mind, I still had, like, that purity culture, like, teaching. So I remember, I guess a few years had gone by, and I made one attempt to get back to church, and I didn't really know anything outside of the Church of Christ, so I went to a Church of Christ with a woman that I knew, and I just couldn't connect with it. Mm. But then on top of that, I felt so guilty trying to be there because, like, I had had sex with people, and I felt like just the most disgusting human being. I felt so unworthy. I hated when guys in the church would talk to me, even if it wasn't, like, in a way that was of, like, romantic interest or anything, because I felt like I had, like, a scarlet letter on or something, or, like, people could tell that I had, like, done something that they wouldn't have approved of.
Yeah.
So after about a month, if even, of doing that, I left, and then I didn't really pursue a relationship again until my conversion years later. So what started to help me break down my walls and just be more open to pursuing that relationship again was I definitely got better friends. So I got strong Christian friends, and even for, like, the girls in my life who weren't Christian, they still had, like, similar morals as me.
Right.
So it was nice to have that influence of people who were trying to do different things with their lives, who had different views on relationships, of sex, of religion, all these things. So slowly being able to lean on their love and support, it caused me to stop seeking that out so much from guys. Also at that point I had been hurt so many times that like I like really hated men. Which I will say now, if you hate men, you shouldn't. I do believe that's sinful, but it's very hard when you like I know there are so many women out there who've dealt with crappy guys, but it's okay. They don't speak for all guys. There are great guys out there.
Well, and actually, I'm so glad that you said that because I think that our culture is so weird in just the ways that it views like both genders. And like, I'm in this Marco Polo group with some Catholic women, which is amazing. It's like people who follow another podcast that I love, Among the Lilies. So if you've never listened to that, you should totally, because it's amazing. But somebody was talking the other day about how they saw a post that a lot of their like married and mom friends had shared that was basically like, if your husband comes home after a long day of work and sits on the couch and watches TV and then just makes you deal with the kids, like that's emotional abuse and you should divorce him. And it's like,
Oh,
whoa,
wow.
what? Like that escalated quickly. Like there's just, I feel like people just feel like they have to take sides. It's either like, I'm a feminist and so I support women and like hate men. Or like I'm like, and this is of course a false dichotomy, but like I'm a good church girl and I'm just gonna be super submissive and just be walked all over. And that's not how it has to be. Like we complement one another, women and men, and like we need each other and we need to respect and honor one another. But we live in a culture that makes that so hard, and it is so common to like bash men when like good men are wonderful.
For sure, totally. And also, quick tangent, that's one of the things I love about Catholicism is I do identify as a feminist, but obviously like very different from like the like third wave
Oh, of
groups.
course, and me as well. I identify as a Catholic feminist. Which is like straight up JP2, like
Oh my gosh, dude. Love him. Not gonna get. I'm
me
like
too.
trying not to get on that like rant of how much I love him, but yes, I love him. He makes me so happy. And I
Oh,
love
me too.
like
Me too.
bragging about him to people like we knew each other or something.
Oh, I love that so much. I think the church just really needed JP2 at the time when we got him.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes. And we still like need his spirit. So shout out to all of his writings and the people who publish them.
Amen.
But I will say, as a feminist, or it was also like being in that time, I was very much like okay, like all men suck, all that stuff. But like seeing the beauty of gender roles in Catholicism, and not even just gender roles, but just like women's places in the church. Like growing up, the Church of Christ, like it doesn't have a lot of spaces for women. So you're either like a mom or you're the church secretary. And I remember being sat down with other girls in the youth group and being taught, oh, here's how to take care of your man. It's like, okay, but like, how do you serve God as a single woman? Like,
Oh,
you're not
absolutely.
immediately married when you turn 18. Like, you need to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was really
Also,
crazy.
like, men aren't children. They can take care of themselves.
Right? No, but
Well, and
like, it
I.
tripped me.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I think I sent you that poster that I had another friend who grew up Church of Christ and
Oh,
eventually left the
uh-huh.
church because of this exact same thing. But she
Oh,
shared a
gosh.
poster of a local Church of Christ conference that they were doing on being a woman of God. And every single session at this conference was presented by like an old balding man.
Yeah.
Telling women how to be good women. Like, did nobody see a problem with that? I guess not.
Nope. I guess not. But yeah, I was going to say, so that environment compared to like men saying like the Hail Mary and giving like Mary respect as like the mother of Jesus, like female saints, like women being able to read in church. Like, that was so foreign to me the first time I saw it, and I loved it, but it was definitely a very different experience from the way that I grew up. So I'm very appreciative that Catholicism has that balance of, like, no, it's not just the men. Women are just as much, involved in this religion as the dudes.
Oh, my gosh, 1,000,000%. And I'm sure that I've talked about this on a prior episode of the podcast, but, like, if you haven't, everyone needs to read JP2's Letter to Women. It's amazing. And he literally says, like, we need women anywhere that important decisions are being made. Like, how much more feminist than that can you get?
Right?
We need women in government. We need women teaching kids. We need women in the business world. We need women everywhere, you know, like... And yeah, of course we need holy mothers and wives as well, but that doesn't mean that that's all you have to be.
Yeah, right. No. It's amazing. Like, even I think the thing that's like my favorite thing to see is when priests talk about nuns and the respect and like little bit of fear that they have for them.
Yes.
That's like my favorite.
Okay, have you ever seen the movie The Bells of St. Mary's?
I have not.
Oh my gosh, you need to find it. The first time I watched it, I was like, this is now one of my favorite movies. Because, so the main characters, so it's a priest and a nun. And, oh my gosh, I don't remember who plays the nun, but Bing Crosby plays the priest.
Oh.
And it's an awesome, like, old black and white movie. But my favorite thing about it is just watching, like, the back and forth and like kind of just the banter between the priest and the nun. And you can see just so beautifully like how they complement one another in their friendship. Like, and it portrays the church in a very good and beautiful way. You know, like there's not any weird like romance between the two of them. They just have an amazing holy friendship and you can see how they support one another. And
now that I'm Catholic, I hate that. So I hate like romance in nun movies so much. It's like, this is wrong. Like,
yeah,
if you have a higher calling, it's fine.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, Zuri, you have to watch this movie. It's amazing. I actually just bought a DVD copy. So if you're ever up here, we'll have a movie night. But it's amazing. It used to be on Netflix. I think they took it off, which is rude.
Very poo.
But it's such an amazing movie. My favorite part is, so the nun, like, teaches at a school, and there's, like, this little boy who's, like, getting bullied. And so she, like, goes and, like, buys a book on boxing and, like, teaches this kid how to, like, kickbox.
Oh, my gosh. That's so amazing.
Yeah.
Dude. Oh, my gosh. Also, I like to joke, another tangent. Oh, look at that. I like to joke that the nuns doing things calendar, like, unofficially converted me.
I was going to say, you told me, like, years before you became Catholic that you loved nuns doing stuff.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Like, you don't understand the joy that I get when I see nuns, like, playing basketball or canoeing. Or there's, like, that one picture of a nun in Florida after one of the hurricanes, and she's, like, holding a chainsaw, and she's, like, holding it to a tree in the middle of the road. Like,
I love it.
You do not understand.
I love, because, like, they're real people, too, and I think that stuff just, it just humanizes them so much. Like, they're real people. Like, I had the blessing of when I was doing ministry in college, like, we would play kickball games with, like, Dominican sisters, like, during our training and stuff. Like, you know, we played, we had this awesome game of Foursquare where the favorite house rule was that everyone had to say a saint's name as they passed the ball. And if you couldn't think of another saint that hadn't been used in that round, you were out.
Oh my gosh. I think I'd be out very quickly because I'm definitely like at the baby level of like
Oh my
space
gosh. I
knowledge.
bet you know more than you think you do, though.
Yeah, I like very randomly. I feel, I don't know, I like all the random saints. So before I learned about Saint Francis, after I adopted my dog Bishop, I learned about Saint Roch, and he's like the most random like patron saint of dogs. And I don't know how I, because I Googled it too, so I don't know why
Oh,
Google
that's
showed me
funny.
him and not Saint Francis, but
That's funny.
yeah.
Maybe, I'm sure that was on purpose. I really feel
Oh
like
yeah.
saints choose us, and if you find a random saint, there's probably a reason.
Yeah.
Also, nuns are really good at helping you to find your next best saint friend.
Dude, yes.
One of my favorites that I pray to very regularly, that almost no one has heard of, well, she's technically a blessed, but Blessed Josepheta. And she was an Eastern, like cloistered nun, I believe, like Eastern Catholic in the Byzantine Rite. And I don't know who decided that she was the one of the patrons of finding things, but let me tell you, like, no shade to Saint Anthony, but she's so good at it. And some Dominican sisters told me that too. During our Totus Tuus training, they were telling us about all these amazing saints that we'd never heard of before. And one of them said, no, like, she's so good. Like, it's not in the bag, and then you pray to her, and it's in the bag.
Yeah.
And she's not wrong. So whenever I'm having a hard time, and again, no shade to Saint Anthony, but sometimes I just need a little extra, heavenly power.
Oh, yes.
So I'll call in Blessed Josepheta, and I know that girl's got me.
I definitely wrote her name down because that's my life. I lose everything.
Yeah, I love her. She's awesome. She's helped me find so, like, every time I pray to her, it's like I turn around and, like, oh, there's the thing I couldn't find. It's always like right there.
Oh my gosh. I lost my keys for like 2 hours one time.
Oh my gosh.
So, yes, she's definitely on my list
Yeah,
of
for
people
sure,
to
for
bring
sure.
with me.
And like, if you look her up, the internet doesn't say anything about her being a patron of finding things. But I guess some Dominican sister just decided at some point that that's what they were going to pray to her for, and it works. So you know what? I'm not going to question it.
Oh no, yeah. Also, sisters have a very wonderful prayer life, so if it works for them, then you best
Yeah.
believe.
If they've got this figured out, I'm just not gonna mess with that system. I'm just gonna,
Oh yeah.
take what they've figured out and trust that it'll work.
Oh yeah, I take all of my major prayer requests as Sister Mary Claire. And just saying, never once has she let me down.
I
So
love that. I love that so much. But now that we're on this super long tangent,
Right,
it's
yeah.
barely a tangent though, because we're talking about amazing things that women in the church have done.
Right, yes.
Even if it's just give us great saints to pray with. But yeah, amazing things that women in the church have done. I think that's where we left off, right?
Yeah. Okay, well, speaking of church, I figured I might as well start talking about just like the actual Catholicism part of my
Yeah,
conversion.
totally.
So, yeah. So basically, yes, long story short to some, like all those things were weighing on my heart. And I was just like, okay, obviously, like I've heard the story of like the prodigal son and all that stuff, but doesn't apply to me because like I'm a woman who's had sex with people. And that sounds really dumb, but I've also met a lot of like ex-Christian women who feel the
Yeah.
same way.
Right.
And
No,
even some like
it's not
Christian ones as
dumb
well.
'cause it like every time we sin, even though it's like totally forgivable, like it does, like that guilt is so real. Like it
Yeah.
separates us from Christ and we do have
Yep.
forgiveness, but that guilt is so real.
I will say, okay. So, qualifier, the priest who said this, he's like a little bit more relaxed on his theology. So sometimes I take the things that he says with a grain of salt. I mean, he's still a priest though, so he's like,
yeah. We pray for all priests. Yes. Some need a little extra prayer than others.
Yes.
But we are very grateful for their ministry. And
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And he is an amazing person. But he said something really interesting in a mass one time, and he said that we think of sin as a lot of people have a very basic understanding of sin, which is like, oh, you did wrong, and then if you don't repent or go to confession, like, God's gonna like strike you down right there. But he's like, no, it's the separation that like essentially like kills us, and like we should mourn, we should not be scared of being struck down, we should mourn that separation.
Theology. That's not lax at all. That's perfect theology.
Yeah. So it got to be like a little bit of like a pray about it over like confession thing, and I was like, that's not right.
But definitely that
part leading up to it, that was like,
well, yeah, and that's lesson. Like, that's literally what hell is it's eternal separation from Christ. Like, we don't know what hell actually looks like. Is it really filled with, like, actual fire, or is that just, like, a metaphor? I don't know. I've never been to hell, thank God.
Thank God, yeah.
Hopefully I never will. Please, Lord.
Hail Mary.
I know. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my Jesus, save us from the fires of hell, lead all souls to heaven, especially those in most need of thy mercy.
Shout out to that Fatima prayer.
But, like, the real pain of hell is not whatever eternal flames there are, but just the reality of separation eternally from Christ.
Yeah.
So that's so true, that, like, Jesus wants us to seek him. He wants us to go to confession. He wants us to, like, reunite with him. He never gets tired of forgiving us. We just get tired of asking for it. Which, like, that's so true. Even, like, with humans. If I've made the same mistake a million times, it gets harder and harder to apologize for it, like, every time. So I'm like, well, that was stupid. I should have known better.
Yeah. Yep.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Also, I totally forgot where I left off.
We were talking about sin and separation from God and all that.
Yes. So the actual Catholicism part of like this conversion story. Okay.
It's so great.
Shout out to you and like several other people, especially like, first of all, shout out to Anya, like the best.
Yes.
Literally her, and then all the people I met through her. So Claire, who was on your first episode this season, you and some other people, like your example of what Catholicism was, and like the very like loving and subtle corrections of my understanding of what Catholicism was, really started to plant that seed in my heart. Maybe I wasn't going to convert, but it was something that I wanted to explore.
Yeah.
So my first real interaction with Catholicism was when Anya and I were roommates, like, a few years ago. And during that time, she started her conversion. Or, sorry, that was wrong. She was, like, going into her conversion. She had already started the process.
Right. She was, like, in RCIA and all that.
Yeah,
she and that girl was persistent.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I don't know. She might have been like really humble about it, but she was like doing crazy stuff.
Yeah. Didn't she? She had to like spend the night with Claire to like get to her RCIA classes. Like, she couldn't even stay at her own house and get there on time with DC traffic. She had to stay at somebody else's house.
She had a weird like metro schedule. She did so much to make sure that she made it to all of these obligations, and that was really awesome.
It's gonna take like decades off of her purgatory.
Right? Yeah. Seriously. She entered the church that Easter vigil. So I think it was in April that year. I don't quite remember. But she asked me if I wanted to go, because, like, I don't really do a lot of things with my family. We're not very close like that, so I was spending Easter alone. And pretty much a lot of people around us were, like, going back home for the holiday. So I was just like, yeah, I haven't really been to an Easter service in a while, but this seems like a good time to go. And, like, I want to support you in this process that I don't understand, but I see how hard you've worked for it, so I'd like to be there. So I went to the Easter vigil. I sat down next to Claire's husband, but boyfriend at the time. And he was very sweet in that he... Well, it was very obvious that I was, like, an outsider, did not know anything about the Mass, but he explained everything to me every step of the way. Like, he was very quiet and humble about it, which, like, I always tell people that, like, those adjectives, they're so important because it's so easy for people to feel isolated from the lack of knowledge. And kind of, like, be turned away because of it. So for someone to take that initiative to be like, this is what this means in English, because it's Latin and you don't speak that. And, like, this is why we do this, and sit here, stand here, all that stuff. It was really helpful to have him as a guide. And because of that, I was able to understand more of the service and connect with it. So I don't think I had ever walked... No, that's not true. I'd been in a Catholic church once before for a funeral, but that was so long ago that I didn't remember the experience at all. So this is really the first time as an adult that I could see the beauty inside. And then I'd never been to a high church with, like, liturgy or anything. So that was, like, one of the first times I had ever really experienced that. And it was just so unlike anything I'd ever seen before, but it was very reverent and it was very beautiful. And then the symbolism and everything, like, that really touched, like, a part of me. But I just kind of filed it away as, okay, that was really pretty. Now I'm going to move on to, like, the next
But those things, like, that's what I love about beauty, is that, like, it can strike you in a moment, and even if you, like, forget about it, it remains there within you. Like, you can't just, like, completely block out a truly beautiful experience. It's gonna stay in there, and then at some point, like, you'll think of it and be like, oh, yeah, that happened.
Well, funny you say that. I went to, like, later that year, I'd gone to, like, a full Catholic Mass wedding. And I did have, like, that same type of, oh my gosh, like, this is beautiful. I, like, very, I don't even know what the heck I was thinking, but I learned, like, I tried to learn one part of the Mass. So it's when they offer the prayers up and, like, the church says, Lord, hear our prayers. I, like, remembered that from the vigil. So I was saying it, trying to, like, impress myself to be like, oh, like, I totally know what's happening here. Like,
that's awesome, like, though. That's awesome, though. Well, and I love that that's, like, the part of the Mass that stuck out to you the most. Because I know that, like, for me, as a cradle Catholic, grew up in the church, went to Mass every Sunday of, like, my entire life. Like, literally every Sunday of my entire life, unless I was sick or something. But, yeah, like, that offertory part there where we're just, like, you know, present. Oh, hey, I see your face now. Hey,
it's me.
Yeah, I haven't seen your face yet today.
Enjoy this wonderful angle.
Love it. But, yeah, I always had a hard time until the past few years, like, really connecting with that particular time of the Mass. When I learned, like, it's good to, like, in that time help to, you know, ask God how I can make a better offering of myself, and a bigger offering of myself. But I just think that's so amazing that, like, the part that you instantly connected with was, like, the part that took me, like, a lifetime to figure out.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, oh, golly. Okay, shoot. Where is I going? This is bad. Oh my gosh.
Beauty, conversion, mass,
Oh
that
yeah,
wedding you
okay.
went
So that
to.
part of mass, yeah. Yeah, so I was trying to like stunt on like some of my coworkers too, because I was like, yeah, I've been to like Catholic stuff before. It was like that one, like Easter vigil, that was it. But I don't know,
I
there was
love that
no
that was
like,
your brag. Like,
I know, right?
it's such a
Like,
humble
oh
brag. I
yeah.
feel like, yeah, I've been a mess.
So I remember telling my one of my coworkers at that wedding, I was like, oh, I'd like felt the need to start getting serious again. I'd gone through like another really big heartbreak. But that was the one where I was just like, yeah, I'm like ready to leave DC. Like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I don't want to see like this person or be reminded of like anything to do with that ever again. But I remember right as I was like leaving that year, I like felt the need to like find something more substantive to do with my life, and religion was that, but I didn't know where to start. And I say all of that because when I was at that Catholic wedding, I told one of my coworkers, like, oh, I'm not like a practicing Christian really, but if I did decide to go back to the church, I think I'd want to do it as a Catholic.
Oh,
And I
that's
said that
funny.
not knowing anything about like the theology, just like being in love with the mass and like the liturgy and all of that stuff. So after that, I finally moved to Nashville that December, and by the time Easter rolled around, I remembered like all the beauty of the vigil, the Easter vigil. So Claire had already sent me a list of like nuns to talk to
Of
when I
course
got
she
to
did.
Nashville.
Because that's what
Oh
Claire
my gosh.
does.
Shout out. Okay, I didn't say Claire sent me so many cards, prayer cards and medals like before and like after like I decided I wanted to convert. So shout out to her for real for like all the knowledge there. But yeah, but before I left, she knew that I like loved nuns for whatever reason, and she told me to talk to the Dominican sisters here in Nashville. So I remembered her saying that, and about a week or two before Easter, I called the mother house, and Sister Mary Claire is the one who answered
Which
and
is
said,
like
"Hey,
literally Claire's name, Claire
I
Marie.
know,
Isn't that
right?
funny? The
I
Nashville
never thought
Dominicans
about that."
also have a sister, Marie Genevieve, and my name is Genevieve Maria. Isn't that funny?
Wow. Oh my, I've never considered that, but my
Yeah.
mind is blown. Oh my gosh. So shout out to you, St. Clair. Really do an amazing job there. Yeah, so I was like, hey, my name is Zuri. I'm not Catholic at all, but I went to like an Easter vigil last year. I thought it was really pretty. Can I don't know like how to find Catholic churches. Like I don't know what the name of like Catholic church would be, how to tell if it's like really cat, I don't know. So I was like, well, do the nuns like or would I be able to celebrate with the nuns? And she was like, yeah, you can come
I'm
visit
sure
us
that's
at
like a
Mother
nun's
House.
favorite kind of message. It's like, hey, I'm not Catholic, but like, can I come hang out?
Right, yeah. So she was like, yes, here are the instructions, here are the deets. Also, I will be like celebrating with my sisters, but I can find you after the service and I'll introduce myself to you. So, first of all, if you've never celebrated an Easter vigil with nuns, you need to. It is the most beautiful thing ever. And then for the Dominican sisters, their habits, it's, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I'm like falling in love with like the service all over again.
I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, so their habits, they're black and white, and they have like black cloaks. I'm sure there's a real word for that, but I'm messing it up right now.
Oh, what is
But
it? Like
basically
the cape things. There's a real name for it,
a
though.
scapular? No.
No,
That's
that's
wrong.
yeah, they do wear a scapular, but that's not it.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Oh, what is it?
I'm gonna
I know that, like, the ones that, like, the Benedictine monks wear, it has this, like, really nonsense name. I can't remember what it is, though. But I went to one of my monk friends' solemn profession. And it
Huh.
was amazing. And when you, like, take your final vows, they give you, like, one of these cape things, and it has, like, a really nonsense name.
Oh, wow. Oh, golly. I definitely tried to Google it, but there are too many words here, so I'm just gonna Google it later.
Whatever that nun cape thing is that they wear.
Yeah, whatever that is. So those are black, but then their habits underneath are white. So what they do is they walk, or the procession starts outside the church, and like the candles are lit, all that stuff, and they're wearing like black. And when they walk into the church, they keep the black on. And then obviously, like the church is dark, when like you walk in and all that. So when the lights go up at the Gloria, I believe I've only been to like two.
That sounds
No, I've only
right.
been to
That
like
sounds
three
right.
Easter
Yeah.
vigils. So like, ignore me if that's wrong. But yeah, so when the Gloria starts and the lights turn on, they take their capes off to reveal the white underneath. And it's like they go from a period of mourning to like a period of joy in the
Ugh.
mass. And that was like really awesome
I
to
just got
see.
goosebumps. I love that. I love
Yeah, it was
that.
awesome. It was, oh my gosh. So it was like a wonderful service. And then like obviously they didn't have the baptisms and the confirmations
Yeah,
because
because they're nuns.
like yeah. So they're all like
They have to
baptized
already be
pre-canon.
baptized and everything.
Oh yeah. So they already had that, or they didn't have that, but then after the service I stuck around and I waited for Sister Mary Claire to come find me. It was pretty easy because I'm black. And it's like Nashville, and it's like Nashville Catholicism. It's so, like she definitely like did not have to struggle to point me out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she spoke with me a little bit and she was like, "Hey Zuri, thanks for coming. Like if you ever want to come back to the mother house to take a tour, just let me know when you want to come back and I can show you like this beautiful historical house that we have." So it's like,
Yeah,
"Oh cool, I can do that."
obviously.
Oh yeah. Oh, she was sneaky. Oh, she definitely
They love giving tours of that mother house, and I would too. It's beautiful.
Oh yeah, it's oh my gosh, it's amazing. So I came back for a tour, obviously, and then after the tour, she was like, "Oh, like I have like some tea and cookies here for us, and also like we're about to pray the rosary. So if you wanted to stay for that, you can stay for that. And here's like a rosary if you wanted it." So we had tea and cookies. I was like, "Sure." I loved seeing all of like the nuns earlier, so like I'll stay for rosary with you. So she gave me my first ever rosary. She also gave me like resources to follow along. It was like very foreign to me, but obviously, again, very beautiful. Just like the words, like they're so poetic. I'd never heard prayer like be so poetic like that before. Obviously, like the unison, that was like amazing to hear. I can't even explain. Like people have talked about like the unison of like Catholic
Yeah.
prayers before
It's
and
like the
like
choirs of angels, like coming down to
yeah.
earth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
No, it was amazing. So after that, I was just like, "Okay, so I had like an amazing time. I'd love to see you again and hang out." So she kept on inviting me back for like tea and cookies and rosary.
I love it.
So I went about, I'd say like once a month. And I remember at one point, I feel like I'm like repeating myself, but whatever. It like makes more sense chronologically. But we were having a conversation about like work stuff because I had like just lost my job. She was
Yeah.
talking about why she became like a nun, like all of these things. And she was like, "I think you'd be a good Catholic because she was like, "I'd never really seen anyone interested in the Easter Vigil who wasn't Catholic. And like you already knew so much about the mass because I freaking Googled it before I went." And then I told her like I loved St. Augustine, like the city in Florida growing up. And I like Googled a little bit about the saint, and I was like, oh, like he was a pretty cool saint. And she's like, well, you already like know this like about the saint.
I love how casual that is. So like, I feel like you'd make a really good Catholic.
Yes.
Nuns can get away with that stuff, man.
Yeah. See? Oh my gosh. It was so funny. And apparently she told one of her friends in the mother house about me like that day. Which is funny because her friend ended up like coming to my confirmation like a year later.
Oh, I love that.
But yeah, so after that, at first I was like, no, that's silly. I don't really actually know anything about Catholicism. Like, for all I know, that they're just like crazy people who like have all these saints and like pray to all of these like dead people. It's like, that doesn't sound right.
But at the same time, like, you have this like growing sense of beauty and goodness.
Right, yeah. So at that point I was just like, well, I am trying to like get more serious. I don't want to go back to the Church of Christ. And like, here's something where I know like you guys share like my consistent like life ethic belief.
Yeah.
Like, there were other political reasons why I had already been drawn to Catholic people. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, well, that beauty and just like the reverence of like those masses, like that really stood out to me. So I figured it there wouldn't be any harm in like looking into it more. So she told me to check out a church here in Nashville. It's called St. Mary's of the Seven Sorrows. If you're ever in Nashville, you need to go to this church. One, it's the oldest church in Nashville, period, of any denomination. And then two, like, it's so beautiful. And they also do solemn masses, which are the most beautiful things ever there. So I went to, or before I went to like the Catholic bookstore, and I bought this mass guide. So basically it walks you through the mass, and then there are like footnotes on the side, explaining like the different parts of the mass, the different parts of the church, so like what you see like in a church, and then it just like explains like this is what it means and like why you do it. So I had that and I followed along with it, and I remember during the opening there's like a black guy who walked by in the aisle, and he was holding the cross. So he was a seminarian, but at the time I didn't know what seminarians were.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, like black person.
Black Catholics, they exist?
Yeah, I was very shocked. I was like, oh, this black guy, like, he's totally here. We're here. Cool stuff. So after the mass, I like was sticking around at the church for like a little bit. Cause like by that time I had had some conversations with some people where I was like, oh, I think I'm interested in this, but like I don't know where to start. So someone told me I need to find like RCIA. So, but I didn't know like how to find that really. So I remember sticking around, and the black guy, the black seminarian, he came back out from like behind the altar, and I guess he was like doing some like general like chores or whatever. So I like walked up to him and I was like, hey, I think I'm interested in becoming a Catholic. And he was like, whoa, okay, like here's all the information you need to know. Also, I run this Facebook page called Black Catholic, and you should follow it because there really aren't a lot of us here, as you've noticed, and it's helpful to have like that cultural perspective on Catholicism as well. So basically I followed it, and like I found our cathedral. I started attending there, but in the midst of my attendance, there was a post that he put up, and it was for this historically black Catholic church in Nashville, which I just learned like a few weeks ago that black Catholics existed, but it completely blew my mind that there were historically black Catholic churches.
I love that. Yeah, I recently found out that we have one in Wilmington too.
They're kind of, it's like there are a lot of them and then there aren't, but they're like randomly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I feel like you have to know they're there to find them.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because they're freaking amazing.
Yeah.
But, so I went to that church, immediately, like, got hooked, like, okay, they have, like, a gospel choir, because, like, it's
black people in the
South, like, we love gospel, so they got a gospel choir, and I remember after, like, the second Sunday I visited there, one of the ladies of the choir came up to me, and she's like, oh, are you an alto? Because we're looking for altos in our choir.
And amazing.
I was like, fun story about that. I am.
Wait, I had a nun do that to me once. I was, like, visiting some nuns in Alabama, and this is while I was discerning, and they were like, are you an alto? Because we need some altos for our choir. And I was like, sister, what are you assuming right now? Bold assumptions.
I was like, why? Like, you don't even know my name, for real. And she didn't. It was only the second time I'd been at that church. But I was like, okay, this is clear. Like, I've never had, like, an interaction like that before.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe God's trying to, like, tell me that there's, like, a place here for me. So I started going to choir practice and singing at that church. All the while, I made it known that, like, hey, I'm not Catholic, but I would like to convert. So we're like, cool, we'll set you up with our deacon. Our CIA starts in September. But this was still, like, early summer when I had started, like, singing with them and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you enjoyed this first part of my interview with Zuri. I actually recorded this with her several months ago, but decided to hold on to it to save to release for season 3. So we're here now. Yay! And I hope that it has been edifying for you. I just really enjoy having conversations with good friends like Zuri because we can be so real and really speak what's on our mind. And I so appreciate her humility and vulnerability in being able to speak about how her experience really was, about how life is not just all of a sudden easy now because she became Catholic and all of that. And I really, really appreciate you, Zuri, and everything that you have been for our friendship and everything that you've given for this podcast. So thank you so much. And I hope that you all stay tuned for next week's part 2 of this episode with Zuri. I am actually excited that we get to extend this for another episode because Zuri is such a gem that I hope you all have a Zuri in your life.
If you haven't already, make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and to give us a rating and review on iTunes. When you give us that rating and review, it makes it easier for other people to find the podcast so that we can spread all of these amazing points of view and thoughts we're sharing with an even greater audience. Thank you all for listening. Bye-bye.